This is Social Entrepreneur with Tina Rosenberg of the Solutions Journalism Network.
Do yourself a favor and read through some of the stories in the Story Tracker. It'll make you feel better. It'll make you feel better about the world. It'll make you feel more empowered and excited. News does not have to be a constant cavalcade of depression.
Welcome to Social Entrepreneur. My name is Tony Lloyd. I'm a former Fortune 500 executive, but today I spend my time with changemakers who are making an impact in the world. Each week we hear exciting stories of ordinary people just like you who are making a difference. They share their successes, their failures, and what they're learning along the way. Thanks for being with me today. Let's get started. Hi, and welcome back to Social Entrepreneur and today's guest, Tina Rosenberg of the Solutions Journalism Network. May 3rd is World Press Freedom Day. According to the Knight Gallup survey, 84% of Americans believe that news media is the key to a healthy democracy, and yet less than half, 44%, can name an objective news source. So the business model is under attack. Political attacks are coming against news organizations, and yet news organizations are a key part of a healthy democracy. One of the solutions for journalists is to focus on solutions, to tell the whole story, not just talk about what's wrong in the world, but to highlight people who are making a difference. So here she is, Tina Rosenberg of the Solutions Journalism Network.
The problem we're trying to solve is that since the mid-1970s, roughly Watergate and the Vietnam War, journalists, serious journalists anyway, we have defined our job pretty exclusively as uncovering wrongdoing. And at the time, that was important because journalism had given too many powerful people a free pass. But it has been such an exclusive focus on what's wrong that we are distorting people's view of society. We are not covering the other half of the story, which is how people are solving those problems. What the Solutions Journalism Network does is that we try and legitimize and promote the idea that journalists should cover that. We should be writing about how people are responding to problems and what evidence is of success. Not as cheerleading or advocacy or good news or fluff, but as rigorous journalism. So we work with news organizations around the country and now increasingly overseas to help them do these kinds of stories.
If you were to, you know, you're flipping through either online or in a newspaper or wherever, and you ran across a solutions journalism story, how would you know it was a solutions journalism story?
That's a great question. Well, it would be a story that probably talks a little bit about the problem, but also looks at how someone is trying to solve it and what results that they're getting. In a way, you'll know it's a solutions journalism story because it'll have a different psychological effect on you than traditional journalism. With traditional journalism, which is problem-focused, the effect it has is we tend to want to go to bed and pull the covers over our heads because we feel like the problems of the world are so overwhelming and oppressive and nothing can be done about them. But if you're reading a solution story, it makes you feel empowered. It makes you feel excited. It makes you feel like, hey, there is stuff going on out there to change things.
One of the dynamics that I think about here is sort of the difference between the role of, you write in the New York Times and you've written for many national publications, and they sort of have a national, international voice. But I think a lot of the nitty-gritty reporting that is done that impacts communities directly are done by local and regional reporting outlets. So are those the kinds of organizations that you work with?
It is, increasingly. We are now focusing on working with really small news organizations in places where journalism has really been hollowed out. A lot of local news organizations have closed. The ones that haven't closed have cut their staff. We're working with one paper in Alabama, for example, that had 40 people 15 years ago, and now it has 7. So we're trying to work with those organizations to help them form collaborations with their neighbors to work on projects that are of great importance to their region. For example, we have a project in New Mexico where seven small newspapers collaborate on series like rural health care or opioids. We work with an organization called Your Voice Ohio, which is 16 or even more, I think, different news organizations. And they do reporting on issues of great interest to Southern Ohio, all with a solutions focus. And one of the things we're trying to do is get readers and viewers and listeners in those areas re-engaged in the news, because these news organizations are doing the kinds of stories that audiences really demand.
And I think that is an important role of the local and regional news organizations. I mean, anyone can go anywhere online and find the reporting on the national issues. In fact, almost too many places, so many voices. There's just so much noise in journalism today, or in quasi-journalism around the edges of journalism. But when it comes to, but what does that mean at my house, or what does that mean in my town or my county or in my region? That's really a role that those organizations play, isn't it?
Oh, that's absolutely right. And local journalism is really imperiled. With the rise of the internet, journalism has shifted to, as you say, online, national reach, and journalists have moved to a handful of cities on the coast. And journalism in the Midwest and the South and the Mountain West, it's been hollowed out substantially. And that's a huge, huge issue.
As you focus on solutions within the Solutions Journalism Network, one of the key questions, and I really love this question, is who does it better?
Yes. I mean, that's what solutions journalism is. Our city has a problem. We're going to report on the city's problem, but let's also look at who's doing a better job and how they're doing it. And incidentally, if you want to have impact, if you want to bring about change in your city, it's really great to add that solutions component, because nothing embarrasses a city official more than being told 50 miles away they're doing a much better job with the same resource. It takes away his excuses.
Yeah, you know, I do think that's an important point. So you started off by saying we have this tradition of, holding powerful people accountable that has really risen since the 1970s and the whole Watergate reporting and all that. But a really powerful way to hold people accountable is not to just say, look how terrible they are. Look, you know, here's some gotcha journalism. We've caught you out. It's to say, yes, everybody has the best intention. We're all doing the best we can. But by the way, here's somebody else over here who is in a similar situation, and here's how they have made progress. I think that's another way of holding people accountable.
Oh, I totally agree. That is part of watchdog journalism.
Tell me what is not solution journalism.
Well, that's a great question, because a lot of times when we go into a newsroom, you'll see people sitting there with their arms folded and they're thinking, this isn't real journalism, I don't do this. And the reason they're thinking that is that they're confusing something else for solutions journalism. So we talk about imposters. Here are things that sometimes are confused for solutions journalism. And one of those things is the hero story, a story that praises someone for their great qualities. It's not solutions journalism because it's not really looking at the work they're doing and whether it's effective or not. Another thing that's often confused for solutions journalism are stories where the reporter or sometimes opinion columnist will say, here's how I think we should solve a problem. That's theoretical. Real solutions journalism is going to a place and reporting on what they're doing. So it's practical on the ground reporting. And you can't just sort of be celebrating what they're doing, because that's also not good journalism. You have to be critically reporting on it. Here's what works about it. Here's what doesn't work about it.
A couple of things about that. I know that part of your mandate around solutions journalism is to talk about the impact, right? So is there some measurable outcome? It's not, these are people who are trying to do something good. I'm doing air quotes with my fingers here that nobody can see, who are trying to do something good. You know, these are people who are having an impact, and here's how we know whether or not it's working, right? So as you think about solutions journalism and newsrooms that are practicing solutions journalism versus news organizations that are not, is there a measurement that you're looking for? Is there some impact that you yourself as a solutions journalism network, how do you measure your impact? How do you know if it's working?
Yeah, impact is a tough question, and it's one you can answer on a lot of different levels. We know whether we as an organization are being effective because we can count the number of great solution stories that journalists produce and the number of newsrooms that are adopting this as a regular practice. But that's not what most people mean by impact. It's very difficult to say whether a story that has a solutions component has a greater impact on public policy than one that doesn't. We have a lot of anecdotal examples of ones that do. For example, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, which is the major paper in Cleveland, had done several series on the problem of lead paint, which is a very big problem in Cleveland. And in the last 10 years, they had done two such series investigating the problem, and they had produced practically zero political change and policy change. Then we helped them to take another try at it, this time doing an investigation. They were looking at lead paint through the lens of race, but also adding a solutions component. They went to other cities like Rochester, Akron, Grand Rapids, who were doing a much better job than Cleveland, and wrote about what those cities were doing. They even published a chart in the paper saying, here's what successful cities do, and here's what Cleveland does. And that has produced real change. A lot of the people who work on lead were fired and replaced with others. The budget was greatly increased. Many of the best practices in other cities were now adopted in Cleveland. And the reporters who worked on the story attribute that to the solutions component, because the city can't say, hey, we're doing the best we can. There's no way we can do any better, because you can show that, hey, right across the lake, they are doing better. So we have anecdotal examples of that kind of impact, but it's very difficult to measure that in a more quantitative fashion. The other thing, though, that journalists are finding, and this we can measure, is that solutions journalism increases trust. Not only trust in our news organization, because we have a better relationship with our city when people know we're not just doing gotcha journalism. We're also really interested in highlighting what's going on here that's working and doing that in a serious way. It not only increases trust in journalism, it increases our trust in each other, because most of what we know about the world, especially people who are not like us, we get from the media. And if the media is only reporting what people do that's awful, then why would we trust them? If the media is also reporting how people are solving problems and doing good things, it does increase interpersonal trust, which has been falling, not coincidentally, since the mid-1970s, exactly coinciding with the rise of journalism's really complete focus on covering wrongdoing.
It is interesting. I went back and listened to an interview with Alberto Ibargüen, who is at the time the president CEO of the Knight Foundation. And he was saying what he had observed. And at one point he was, editor of the Miami Herald and different large news organizations. What he was describing was in the 1960s, you had a lot of journalism companies, newspapers, et cetera, going public for the first time. And at the time, the founders were large shareholders in that, and they had a journalism background. So this happened to coincide around the time that, around the 70s to the 90s, the major shareholders became more institutional shareholders, people who are looking for a return on investment, while at the same time, what they saw happening was, Craigslist and online job boards and other organizations were coming along that were stripping the revenue out of these organizations. So that dual process of, the business pressure from shareholders that were not really journalists per se, and the stripping away of the revenue stream sort of squeezed news organizations. So there is there's this financial pressure to perform. So cutting back on the number of journalists in the field, cutting back on the depth of reporting, cutting back on original reporting versus sort of the, rip something off the AP wires and then print it and call it news, So do you think that really is one of the reasons that we see an eroding trust in journalism per se?
Oh, yeah, I do. And what you describe, which is incredibly toxic, is still going on, and it's not showing any signs of abating. You have a lot of newspapers that have been bought up by hedge fund managers. I don't know why anybody who works for hedge fund would think that there's a profit to be made in buying a newspaper, but it's still happening. The LA Times, the Denver Post, every year they lose more and more people. And I don't know how anybody expects that will turn a profit, because a lot of what these newspapers are publishing now is a couple of pages. It's so thin. There's nothing in it that anybody would buy anymore. We have to produce a product that matters to people if we want to survive. And one of the projects that the Solutions Journalism Network is doing is we're working with, as an experiment, a small newspaper. Actually, it's in Montgomery, Alabama, to help them shift their coverage so that most of what they're doing are the kinds of really rich, in-depth enterprise stories about issues that really matter to Montgomery, and some of that solutions journalism, not all of it, but some of it. And to do that, they have to abandon a lot of low-value incremental coverage, like covering press conferences, that might not matter so much. And it's hard for journalists to make that shift, but they're finding in Montgomery that it's really having an effect. People want to spend time with those stories, and we're going to be finding out whether, as a result, they're more willing to subscribe to the paper. There has been a tremendous amount of innovation and change in journalism in the past 15 years, but almost all of it has been on the side of how you deliver journalism. What's the platform? Almost none of it has been on the content. What is news? And that has to keep up. We have to really be sitting down and thinking through what matters to our audience. What is the value that we can provide? And journalists are not really doing that.
I'm going to swing back to something you talked about in your impact, which is trust in the media. Those numbers have been going down for a long time. And are you saying then, well, let me just one more sort of parenthetically say this. I mean, it hasn't helped that one of the most powerful voices in the world, a position, a title that is one of the most powerful positions in the world, has been hammering away at, and I'm doing air quotes here again, fake news. I'm horrified with that phrase anyway. Do you think that as media in general is under attack, do you think that solutions journalism is a way to counter that wave of the loss of trust in news organizations?
I do, in part. I think there's several parts to the decline of trust in journalism. One of them is political ideology, and that's the one that the gentleman that you're speaking of is contributing to with his cries of fake news. I just want to say that news organizations, reputable news organizations, do not make up stories. Sometimes we don't get everything right. We do make mistakes, but we do not make up stories to get clicks. It's surprising how many people think we do. But there was a large group of people in the United States. Most of them are conservative Republicans who will never believe anything that is in the mainstream media. That's one group of people who distrust the news. A second group is people who genuinely are confused about how to sort out what's real from what's fake. I have a story that came over on my Facebook feed. How do I know if it's real or not? And there's some attempts to address that by having sort of, here's a verified news source, and you have like a good housekeeping seal of approval. Then there's a very big group of people, and here's where solutions journalism comes in, who don't trust the news because they don't see themselves reflected or respected by the news. You know, the journalist from the New York Times goes out to Kentucky and, you know, you look for the people with four teeth. You always are writing stories that make people look like ignorant yahoos if they're from the South. That's the way Alabamans think of it anyway. We go to inner city Chicago as a journalist. We know we're going to be focusing on crime and poverty. People who live there know that those stories, not necessarily inaccurate, but they're not the whole story. There's other things going on that are good in Alabama and Kentucky and inner city Chicago, and the mainstream media is not interested in those stories, and therefore we don't trust the mainstream media. So solutions journalism can help with that because it shows that journalists are interested in all your glory, in what you're doing here that isn't working and what you're doing here that is working. And that's a really important component in rebuilding trust.
I love that answer. If somebody was interested in solutions journalism, now I'm thinking of two different kinds of organizations. So, you know, like a local regional news organization. And then there are a lot of us out here who are bloggers, podcasters, you know, sort of quasi-media, if you will. How do regional and local news organizations get involved in solutions journalism? And then how do the rest of us, so citizen journalists, if you will, how do we get involved in solutions journalism?
Well, news organizations can just send us a note. We have on our website, request a workshop. We'll come out and work with you. We'll train your staff for free. We'll work with a group of people who are working on a special project. We have some large national projects going on. Like, for example, we're recruiting news organizations to participate in a project we call Democratic Renewal, where news organizations will report on what's going on in their communities to improve civic life and the political process. So news organizations can contact us. People who are independent journalists can join the Solutions Journalism Network. We are a network. We have a hub of journalists, and it's free, again, to join, and you get access to all our tools, our teaching materials, our learning lab. We have something on our website at solutionsjournalism.org called the Story Tracker, which is a database of solution stories. We have a couple thousand in there right now. I think we have more than 3,000. We hope to be putting 6,000 in by the end of the year. And those are solutions journalism stories, some of which we had something to do with, a lot of which we didn't. We're making that available as a resource, not only to other journalists, but to students, to teachers. We have a program called Solutions U that is working with college professors to help them use solutions journalism as a teaching tool when they're teaching about social change. Organizations might be interested in looking up how other organizations like ours are solving a certain problem. If your city has a problem, you might want to go to our Story Tracker and look at how other cities have solved the same problem. This is a resource that isn't just for journalists.
If people were looking for Solutions Journalism Network online or on social media, where would they look?
At solutionsjournalism.org, solutionsjournalism.org. We are on Facebook. We're on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is souljourno, souljourno.
And a call to action. So people have been hanging out with you and me for the last 20, 25 minutes or so. If they were to go and do something, what would you like to see people go and do as a result of this conversation?
Two things, I guess. I would like people, if they're really interested in solutions journalism and they want their local media to do more of it, call them and let them know. That's one thing. And subscribe to and support your local media. If they're producing a product that you feel adds value to your life, journalism costs money. Please support it. Otherwise, it's going to go away. And we're seeing the results of that. The other thing that I'd like people to do is do yourself a favor and read through some of the stories in the Story Tracker. It'll make you feel better. It'll make you feel better about the world. It'll make you feel more empowered and excited. News does not have to be a constant cavalcade of depression.
Well, that's a great place to leave it right there. Tina, thanks so much for joining us on Social Entrepreneur.
It's a pleasure to be here, Tony. Thank you.
And thanks to you, the listener, for joining us today. You are the reason that we produce Social Entrepreneur every Monday. You can find the show notes, bonus material, and more at tonyloyd.com. That's TonyLoyd.com. Well, listen, thanks so much for joining me today. And until next time, please remember to use this one short, amazing life and go make an impact. Thanks. We'll talk to you next time on Social Entrepreneur.